Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the John T. Chance Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and special guest co-host, Dan Perry. Our topic tonight, Assault on Precinct 13. Well, hey everybody, and welcome back to the old podcast here in the Phantasmo Lounge.
Hello.
Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting
Thanks for
me.
Being here.
Yes.
Before we get started, a couple things, a couple announcements, cool things coming up. We've got the big Monster Fest convention, one day, free, absolutely free admission convention here in, well, over there in Chesapeake, Virginia, at the Chesapeake Central Library, 298 Cedar Road. It's a one day, all day event. We'll be celebrating Dr. Madblood's 40th anniversary.
Yay.
Yeah. Dr. Madblood is the horror host that everyone in the Southeastern Virginia and beyond area grew up on. And a special guest this year, Miss Veronica Carlson.
Yay!
The Hammer Glamour Babe, who was in Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, A Horror of Dracula, and a few other Hammer films. But those are the important two, because we'll be showing those two that
yes.
night. But Veronica will be there all day long, signing autographs, selling her autographs and her pictures, and hopefully she'll have prints of her artwork, because she's an amazing artist, and she's done some great paintings and drawings of Peter Cushing,
Looking
Christopher
forward,
Lee,
yeah, I
Vincent
see
Price.
That. I want to see the artwork
yeah.
that she's got.
Oh,
I've never
good
seen
stuff.
Any of it. So
it's good stuff.
Really looking forward to that.
And coming up, in addition to, that'll be a special edition of Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion, which is the double feature cult movie night we do every other month at the Chesapeake Library, where we show double feature cult movies, good movies, bad movies, in-between movies, and that's always free, usually the first Friday of the month. But coming up in October, we've got a couple of other really cool events at the Narrow Expanded Cinema on Collie Avenue in Ghent on October 17th. We're showing up on the big screen in that great historical theater, Horror of Dracula and Curse of Frankenstein, a tribute to Christopher Lee. Yes, a double feature, one price, two great movies. It's going to be incredible, and we'll probably have door prizes and stuff, too.
The two that really kicked off
yeah.
the whole Hammer,
oh yeah,
you know, gothic horror.
And yeah, and the first time
huge.
The classic horror,
I mean,
yeah.
I think about that coming in the Narrow, and it's just like, geez, man, that is just,
it's gonna be amazing.
That's big, and
yeah.
I'm
oh.
there.
So. And first time you heard it here first, I haven't even put this on the flyer, so we just find out, the first 100 people through the door get plastic Dracula fangs. Yes. Yes, you do.
What about zombie eyes?
Because we care. Well, if we show Plague of the Zombies.
Okay, all right. Okay.
But no, you get Dracula fangs.
Awesome.
Who knows? We might come up with something for what you get for Frankenstein. I don't know. But that's a definite.
Stitches.
Now, that's on the 17th, and you got to pay to get in, but it's one price for both movies. Incredible. And coming up on Sunday, October 25th, at the Narrow, Collie Avenue in Ghent, is Terror Tease, a burlesque tribute to horror, live burlesque acts. It's going to be amazing. All horror themed, horror movie themed. And now the Intermission Cemetery Boys are going to be playing.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And there'll be a raffle and there'll be all kinds of cool stuff. And you don't want to miss that. That's at 8 p.m. on October 25th. So with all that out of the way, let's
yes.
get to talking about this John Carpenter film. John Carpenter, one of my favorite, I got to say, one of my favorite filmmakers.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Really, it's the second time I've seen this.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I've had the DVD forever. Bought it, you know, watched it when I bought it. And
yeah.
then when we talked about doing this, I figured, well, let's revisit it. And
yeah.
not disappointed
no,
at all.
No.
Just such a solid film.
And it's only his second film.
Yeah, that was going to mention that. Because
yeah.
Dark Star, was it Dark Star?
Yeah, Dark
yeah,
Star.
Yeah, Dark Star was before.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this one and then.
Yeah. And I gotta put this out there before we get really started. This is one of the best zombie movies ever made.
Yay, yes.
The
yes.
best non-zombie zombie movie ever made. And hopefully we can get that point across to you, what we're trying to say here throughout the program here. But if you still don't get it, as I say at the end of every one of these, watch the movie.
Exactly. You got to watch it sometimes. Let me throw out.
Please do.
Nancy Loomis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's in this. Who? She was my preteen crush when I first saw Halloween on NBC.
Oh.
What was that, 81? I think it was
probably.
When it premiered. I think it was
yeah.
81. And Annie stole my heart
yeah.
right from the beginning.
And,
so,
but in this build as Nancy Louise Keyes.
I did not notice that.
Yeah.
Ah,
that's what
okay.
she's billed as. And I think that's her real name. and her stage name is Nancy Loomis.
Loomis, right.
That she started using after that, or something like okay. that. I don't know specifics.
Yes, but she is Annie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Annie. Yeah. While we're talking about the cast, let's go ahead and get the cast out of the way.
Yeah,
Laurie Zimmer.
Laurie Zimmer. Was that Lee?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. You know,
She was smoldering.
She had a smoldering look. Not impressed with her acting. She's
well. She seems
so subdued.
Well, I think that's what she was trying to do. But some of the scenes it really works, and a couple of them, I get what you're saying. It's a little wooden, mm-hmm. a little stiff. But some of them, it's just that smoldering. Like she's got a handle on everything that's going on.
Yeah,
and it's going to happen, and whatever, you know, if she can do something about it or not, it's going to happen.
Well,
she knows that.
In one scene.
Oh, yeah.
And you know she ain't screwing around.
No,
you
don't wish she goes and lets him out of the cell.
Yeah, right.
When she gets shot in the arm, she just kind of stands there and stares at the guy that shot her. If I was the guy that shot her, I would have backed away
because he got bitch slapped pretty quick there.
He got messed up.
And
he got messed up by Darwin Johnston.
Yes, that is Wilson.
Who plays Napoleon. Yes. Oh, what was his last name?
Wilson.
Napoleon Wilson,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I liked him.
He was good. He did a lot of TV in the 70s, but not many other movies.
Okay.
And I'm surprised because he plays a good bad guy, and that good bad guy.
What I liked about him. He's, I guess, the anti-hero in a way.
He was a bad guy, but he was honorable about it.
Yes, exactly right. He wasn't like some badass or anything. He didn't come across. Yeah, he didn't have to prove it.
Yeah.
He didn't have to prove it. All he wanted was a smoke.
Yeah.
The whole movie.
Which is supposed to be some stuff I was reading. One of the tributes to the Howard Hawks films, because there was a lot of cigarettes and stuff in there.
All right,
and this was
Carpenter doing that.
Right. One of his tributes to it. But as we go down the list, we got Charles Cyphers.
Oh yeah, Sheriff Brackett.
Now, see if you feel the same way. Is Charles Cyphers, Carpenter's, Michael Ripper?
Yeah, there you go.
Who is that side guy in everything that Carpenter does, but has some meat
and does it great?
Yeah,
never a bad performance from that guy.
No.
You could put him in a 5-minute role, and it'd be the best 5 minutes in that movie because Cypher nails it. Yeah,
just a solid,
good.
You know, working man's actor.
Yep.
And then we go. We got Little Kim Richards.
Yes. Yes.
You know, who didn't last long in this film.
No, she did not. Future Disney star.
Yeah.
Housewife of Beverly Hills.
I just found out about that.
A few months ago, it popped up.
And was it Savage Streets or whatever she did
in
the
80s? Was she with Linda Blair?
No, not with Savage Streets then. It was one of those, like, Mean Streets or Savage Streets or something.
Okay, all right.
Where she's on the... I should know the name of it. But she's on the poster in, like, a red top and black leather boots and the shades pulled down.
That's Kim Richards?
Yeah, what's the name of that movie?
See the poster, yes.
Hey, if you know
it
what movie I'm talking about, drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. I meant to say that earlier.
Yes. Plug it whenever you
Perfect
can.
Perfect place to slip it in.
I'm going to throw out the main, unless you got more.
No, I was just going to, Kim Richards, little, you know, darling little girl in the 70s. In the Disney Witch Mountain movies and, you know, a few other things here and there.
It's a horrible scene.
But her scene, it's fantastic, though.
Man, you ain't kidding.
It's the shocker of the movie.
Yes. And it, you know, and I'll be honest with you, I gasped. I knew she got killed, but not so in your face, abrupt. And it just...
It's in your face, but it's not gory in your face.
No, it's not.
It's a surprise. It's boom, quick.
It's just enough of a little...
Yeah. And no... And, like, the guy that shoots her... Virtually no reaction.
No.
Like it's just, he's just not even looking at her, really.
Nope.
She
says
it's not barely a thought for him.
Yeah.
Boom.
She got, she wanted twist. She wanted the chocolate vanilla twist. She got vanilla. She goes walking back to the car or to the ice cream truck. And she said, "Hey, mister, you gave me all vanilla." And you're right, without a look, he just points the gun at her and pops her.
And like the blood explodes on her chest.
Yeah,
you don't see a hole or anything.
Nope.
It's like it comes from the ice cream cone.
And her reaction is so authentic. It's just shock,
just surprise,
and then she just falls.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fantastic. It's a great scene, and it really sets the movie off, because up till then it's kind of
things are going,
and it's definitely a Carpenter film. Oh wait, let's go ahead with the last cast member before we get in more into the film. Let's go ahead and finish that out.
Bishop. Austin Stoker.
Austin Stoker. Yes. Fresh from Battle of the Planet of the Apes.
knew I'd seen them somewhere. And I meant to Google some of these.
And, Battle of the Planet of the Apes and Sheba Baby.
Sheba. All right, now that's Pam Grier. I've never heard of. Pam Grier, okay. All right. Mm. Well, I really liked Austin Stoker.
Oh,
wonderful
yeah.
actor. Really solid. Good in this. Very solid in this.
One thing, Darwin Johnston was in Eraserhead.
Was he?
And The Fog.
Was he one of the...
He was a doctor in The Fog. You know what his character's name was?
I'm sure Carpenter... go ahead.
Dr. Fibes.
Dr. Fibes, yes. Okay, so he's the one... He's the doctor that inspects the body
yeah.
that has no eyes that ends up getting up
I
and walking.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, okay.
So that's where... And then after that, I think he kind of... I don't know. He might have done some more, but I think he kind of disappeared.
Okay. Well, you know, Carpenter is just the man when it comes to having that core of actors.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in his early work that he just keeps going back to. And they're always good.
Yeah.
You know, they're always good. They're good actors.
He finds something that works. He sticks mm-hmm. with it, you yeah. know. Yeah, that's about it. I mean, there were a few other people. Oh, I got to mention it. Tony Burton, the black guy prisoner that was with
Was with Wilson. Napoleon, yeah.
You know where he's from.
I meant to look it up, but I swear, is that Childs from The Thing? Did he end up going The Thing?
No. I don't think so, no. Well, maybe. He might, but I don't think so. What I know him from is he was Duke. He was the corner man in every Rocky movie.
Yes. I can see him right
now. Guy, he's
yes.
the guy when the Russian snaps Apollo's neck,
uh-huh.
and the camera goes, he's going, no! In slow motion, the
yes.
camera goes right by him. But yeah, he was Rocky's corner man in every one of the... I think he started
least,
as Apollo's.
Yes, I can see him as Apollo's.
I think he was even in the new one, Rocky Balboa.
Wow.
Or the last one. There's a new one coming out now.
Oh, Rocky 17.
No, but have you seen the trailers for it?
No, I have not seen the trailer.
It's Apollo... It's called Creed.
Oh, really?
It's Apollo's son.
Ah.
He goes to Rocky to train him.
Nice. Nice.
And
see,
Stallone's
like
got
like
the
that.
Gray going on, and he's playing his age. You know, he's
yeah.
not trying to keep going. It looks like it's going to be cool,
hey,
man. You know,
I'm always off track, but the Rocky movies you can always
if
they're on and you're not doing anything, you're flipping. You go, oh hey, Rocky.
Yeah,
because
makes you feel
I
good. Makes you
want to
work out.
Yeah.
Makes you makes you want
exactly. Makes you want to go run down the street.
And I'm
but I won't.
You know, hey, I'll watch Stallone in anything.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, there's some guys.
Hey, he was even funny in Oscar. So
he was even funny in Rhinestone.
You know, I've not seen that. I put that on my to-do list.
Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Dolly Parton, Sylvester Stallone, Tim Thomerson.
Oh gosh! Wow.
And Ron Liebman.
Oh, okay.
And Ron Liebman is hilarious. Talk about underrated comedic actor. Ron Liebman's amazing. And everything I've seen him do funny stuff in, he's funny as shit. He kills me.
Okay. I got to put more on my list.
That's right.
All right.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Assault on Precinct 13.
Yes, yeah, this movie we're talking about.
Which actually is misnamed.
It is?
Mm-hmm. You listen, when he's driving in, he and Bishop, that's Stoker's name, right?
Yeah.
He calls on the radio, and Lieutenant Bishop requests a new assignment. And they say, go to Precinct 9, Division 13.
Oh, I did not catch that. Wow.
Yeah. I was watching this afternoon just to brush up, and I was like, what?
Yeah. I'm surprised that stayed in there.
Assault on Precinct 9.
Yeah, unless...
It just doesn't sound good.
No, and maybe Carpenter said, 13, that sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
Much better. Yeah, one thing I really liked, beginning of this movie,
yeah.
Carpenter... quickly sets the mood.
Oh, yeah.
Man, whatever part of California they're living in,
mm-hmm.
I'd hate to live there because not a damn person lives or even
yeah.
wants to go out on the street. You know?
Yeah.
It is just...
Well, one, let's see. When they were filming, I think, the scenes on the bus or whatever, the bus was driving, mm-hmm. it was something I was reading. Like, it closed down section of town or street
okay.
at that time.
At that time,
you know?
Right.
But yeah, you're right. He does. He sets the mood. And one of the things that really does it, well, a lot of things, but a couple of things is, one, he does the, shows the, in the corner of the screen, shows the time and the day.
Yes, I love that.
And they keep doing that up until shit goes down.
Yeah, up until the siege.
Yeah.
You get a little timeline.
But it almost gives
on.
You that documentary kind of feel.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
And another thing, other than his little, incidental, his little synthesizer mood mm-hmm. stuff, which is really only used at certain points.
Yes.
you hear clearly. There's not a lot of background noise, but there is. You hear, like, the bird that's near him, or you hear the door shut, or him jingling his keys, or stuff that you would hear if you
incidental,
were standing right there.
Right, yeah.
But it's not, like, a lot of ambient background noise. It's like you'd hear the stuff you hear when you're walking out to your car.
Right.
You know, little stuff like that that's near you.
And I think that sets it. Gives you that creepy...
isolated feeling.
Exactly, isolated,
you know?
Feel, yeah.
And it sets that from the get-go. I was noticing that this last time I was watching. I'm sure I noticed it before, but it really does kind of set the pace that... And there's a very few people, too, in each scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know? But, yeah, that just... That really... That isolated feeling from the get-go
sets it up.
The rest of it.
And the intro, the shootout, if you want to call it that.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it looked more like a setup.
Oh,
I mean, the cops had
the gang
members just in an alley, and they're shooting down from the top of them. But, damn, that was bloody,
yeah.
Which I found a little out of character for a Carpenter film, because
he's
not a big bloody, you know, he doesn't show a lot.
You know what that reminded me of, though, because he was talking about his tributes to, like, Howard Hawks films and all. That was more like a Peckinpah.
Yeah, it was.
The Indians up on the ridge firing down the cops in the ravine. And the cops firing down on the cowboys in the ravine, except it was flipped in this part.
Right, your quote, good guys.
Yeah.
Taking out the bad guys. But yeah, it was just.
But they were
a little more violent than I remember any Carpenter. I mean, you know, The Thing. I have to throw The Thing out there because
that's pretty.
But
that's a
more effects.
Yeah.
Shape shifting type effect. But yeah, like I said, second time I watched it, and I was like, damn, that's, jeez, Carpenter, you're throwing blood squibs everywhere on this, aren't you?
But it starts off with, they're going to, the gang members that are going to steal, like, military-grade weapons, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Military
machine guns and
stuff like that. And they actually get them, or get some of them.
They get some of them, yeah.
And that's why the cops are trying to stop them, because when the chief police comes on the radio, you hear the exposition voiceover. Whoever has these weapons, or if they have these weapons, they will be virtually unstoppable.
Right.
If the gangs can ever organize.
and organize they did.
Well, and then the next thing you see, there's three gang members in a room, and there's a black guy, Hispanic guy, and a white guy.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And then they're doing some, like, almost an occult-type blood ritual.
Right. There's like blood brothers or
something.
They're
mixing their blood in this bowl, and... And then the gangs are united.
They're united, yeah. And I like the way, and I don't know if it's a 70s thing or what, but like you said, and if you notice it throughout the movie, you don't get a lot of interaction with the gang members.
No.
But just watching them, you realize that, you know, it's a mishmash of ethnic groups.
Oh,
you know, black, white, Latino.
Yeah, there's no separate.
That one
they have organized into, like, one gang.
Right,
like.
You know, and I know, like, the guy that was in the car or doing the blood ritual, he had kind of, I don't know, he looked kind of Italian looking.
Yeah,
you know, he just had this
The white guy with the light
the
hair.
Yeah, the stash.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy, you know, and I'm thinking, I like that. I like that, you know, he's taken everybody and put it in there, and I don't know if that's just, you know,
I should have got his name. The white guy that had the Mauser shot Kim Richards, the first gang member guy. He's in a few other Carpenter films, too. And I believe he is the guy, and he looks like he's on crack in Escape from New York. He's the guy that walks up to, Lee Van Cleef.
Yes.
Has that weird walk and a spiky hair, and his eyes are like they're set in the back of his head.
Yes.
And he gives him that message.
The same dude.
I think that's the same cat.
Okay, all right.
Weird looking dude.
Yeah, very.
He looks healthy, but he looks weird.
Yeah, he was kind of spaced out.
Yeah.
Not the kind of guy you want to meet in a back alley or any well-lit area, for that matter.
He doesn't last long, but...
No.
But the rest of them, once they get... when the setup, the reason they're trying to lay siege to this police station is...
Yes.
There's four guys in a car.
Yep.
They shoot Kim Richards. Kim Richards' dad was on the phone down the block in the phone booth. Remember those kids?
Yeah.
and he turns around and sees his daughter and ice cream guy laying in the street.
Yeah.
And he runs down there, and he's going freaking out, and then his car pulls out from behind the ice cream truck and takes off, this black car, muscle car. And the ice cream vendor has not died quite yet, and he says, there's a gun in the truck under the seat. And then, boom, and he dies. And then the father puts his coat over the girl, gets the gun, and is just freaked out and goes against his car and chases him down.
Gets in the big, what's that, big Lincoln or something.
Yeah,
and
big
just,
boat car.
Yeah, big boat car and goes after him.
And ends up shooting that one guy.
Right.
And then he just walks away because he's in shock, and he tries to go to a phone and try to call somebody.
Yeah,
and then
what's up with that phone booth? It's in the middle of damn nowhere. Did you notice that?
They used to be like that.
Well, okay. I'll take your word for it, because I was like, did Carpenter just pick that up and stick it in the middle of a baseball field? Because it's just like in the middle
there would be some like on the corners, and there'd be some like on...
Normally on the corners is what I used to see.
Yeah, but long stretches of road, there might be one on an interstate.
Yeah, yeah.
Not an interstate, but, you know, a highway type.
Probably because I haven't seen one in so damn long.
Well, yeah, you know. Yeah, where the hell's Superman change now?
Yeah, well, yeah.
But anyway.
Exactly.
But anyway, so he sees in the distance these two guys just walking slowly towards him, which the slasher films picked up on later.
Yes.
Because that's creepier
there.
Than running.
Yep.
You know, and then he like freaks out and he runs, and he's running and they're walking slow, and he's running and they're walking slow, and he runs by the police station and stops and runs in, and he's in shock and can't really tell him what happened, and they look out the door, they don't see anybody out there, so that's where how it kind of all starts. That they just want to get that one guy.
That's what they're
after.
And
they'll go through anybody in there to get that one guy.
And you got to remember now, what's going on with this precinct?
Oh, yeah.
It's getting shut down. So there's what? You got Bishop, who is the new dude
who's just overseeing
the closing.
Two secretaries.
One cop.
One other cop.
Because the chief there...
went over to the other precinct.
Right, he went to the other precinct.
And they're supposed to cut the... phone and the water off, or
right.
phone electricity off in the morning.
Yep.
But the way we get the prisoners is there's a prison transfer bus coming from one prison, taking these three prisoners to another. One prisoner on there has got the flu or pneumonia or something, and so they pull the bus. He's coughing and hacking, and they don't want it to be contagious and get it. So they're going by, they pull in there, say, can we put our guys into cells while we call a doctor? So that's how they get there. And, not many of them last.
they get taken out pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing about the gang members is this really cool. Once the siege starts, there's hardly a face to them. You barely see any faces.
They are pretty faceless. Yes,
you don't hear them. They don't say anything. Nope. They barely even groan when they get hit, and they start trying to get in the windows, and they're shooting them. The good guys are shooting them and shooting them out the windows.
Yeah.
You know, so they're
with
not
a shotgun that's
shotguns.
Like, I'm going to have to, we'll have to
count
ask.
The shots.
Yes, thank you very much. We're going to have to talk to Craig. Officer Craig.
Inspector
and
Eckert.
Inspector Eckert, and say, look, can you pull off that many shots with a shotgun as quick as he did? Because a couple of them were like, boom, 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 and he's got a pump. And I'm thinking, the guy ain't pumping that, but... Yeah, I'm seeing
he
a few technical
things. He could be that good.
He could be. He is.
I don't know.
He's Napoleon. Yeah. He could be. But I like the way the gangs started taking out the precinct. They all got silencers.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
As far as I think Carpenter using that.
So nobody hears
as a
shots
device.
Anywhere.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's well shot. I mean, we're well thought out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're taking out the windows. And they're just repeatedly taking out the
and
windows.
And they're trying to get in. They keep getting shot. That kind of reminds me of Fulci's Zombie, where they're trying to get
in
the windows.
Thank you. Listen to the music in that scene. It is very Italian.
Yeah.
I put it that way. And it did. It reminded me of the scene near the end of Fulci's Zombie.
Yeah.
And you're right. And
the same thing.
They
they're trying to
coming.
Crawl in his windows, and they're shooting them out the windows.
And
they're
blowing them all away. And that's exactly what I thought. But to me, that driving, because it had that nice thump type of bass drum going, and that
the
droning.
That theme to Zombies, awesome.
Yes, exactly, and it has that same feel to it. And I was just—I'm glad someone else picked up on
you're
that.
Welcome,
I was like,
sir.
I'm not the only one. Yay!
And then though, when they go, this was cool too. Thought out. You know, one of the secretaries or somebody saying, well. You know, somebody had to have heard all that commotion because the good guys were shooting.
Right.
And they'll see, you know, and the bad guys... Oh, the bad guys had pulled the cars out and were using them as shields.
Right.
They pushed them back in the parking spaces.
Exactly. Make it look like
and
nothing
so,
happened.
Well, they'll see, you know, all the bodies. And he's like, what bodies? They took the bodies of their fallen with them.
Yep.
Cover their tracks. That's spooky.
They're smart. It's spooky. it's spooky. And plus, you realize that these guys aren't kidding around. They're organized. They're smart. They're not your dumb criminal.
No.
They are. It kind of becomes a little bit of a cat and mouse type deal, with the people in the building and the gangs outside.
No.
But it does. Man, boy, you talk about Night of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. And it really rings true.
It's got a basement.
It's got. Yeah, that was something I had written down because you got. Well, let me just. Okay.
No.
Night of the Living Dead. Okay,
me.
You got Ben and you got Mr. Cooper. Okay, you got your black lead. You got your old white guy, if you want to call Carl Hardman an old white guy then.
Yeah.
You kind of. You don't really have the same connection between Bishop and Wilson, but.
But you got those two.
You got a little bit of a dynamic there.
Yeah.
A different dynamic.
Well, Wilson comes from the basement because he was in the cell.
And he even says, he says that. Remember the other guy, Wells, goes out through the basement and somehow it links to the sewer. I don't know how that works, but anyway.
Oh, it was some kind of air vent.
Was it an air vent? Okay, well, he goes through the vent and he goes into the sewer and comes up out of the manhole trying to escape later on in the movie. After that, Wilson makes a comment that, hey, we should go to the basement because it's easy to defend. You only get that one door. And I'm thinking it's Mr. Cooper.
Yeah.
And then, the other guy says, no, we need to stay up here because,
there's no other way to escape.
Right. And I'm thinking, wow, there's a nice Night of the Living Dead connection
there. And Carpenter makes no bones about it. He said he was inspired.
So
it's not a ripoff. It was, inspiration.
And another little thing I thought was interesting was if you go back and watch it, you watch it twice. Nancy Loomis's character, she's the phone operator. Actually, is what she is. She's running the phones there. She gets very Barbara-ish. She kind of gets a little catatonic there.
She freaks out a little bit.
Yeah. So I get that vibe there. And then, of course, your gangs are your zombies and, your people are inside.
Yeah. When, and Lee, Laurie Zimmer, her character, she's what I was reading is the Hawksian woman.
Hawksian.
The Howard Hawks, the strong woman who can take care of herself character.
Okay.
So he's pulling from both.
Yes.
Both sources there. But yeah, it owes a lot, to Night of the Living Dead and to Rio Bravo.
Yes, exactly.
It's pretty much the same basic setup as Rio Bravo. And Carpenter makes no bones about that, one of his favorite films. And if they had a bigger budget, this would have been a Western.
Oh, now did he basically just put that out there?
He had said that if they had a much bigger budget, because the budget was only $100,000.
Good gosh.
And even in the early 70s, well, this was 76, so late 70s, that was a piddly amount of money.
It was
a movie.
Yeah, for a movie, it was piddly. Mm-hmm. Good gosh, man. That cost him $100,000. Halloween cost him $300,000,
Yeah.
But when you, when you look at it, I'm trying to think. Wow, there's not that big a jump between one and three, $100,000, other than maybe having a little bit more time to film.
Yeah,
and pay
afford
some actors.
More locations.
Yeah, afford
but
Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, but this really they didn't need more locations.
No, man, that's why I like this movie.
It had to be set there for it to work.
He makes that work.
Oh,
and really, he makes it work in this one. Halloween didn't have many settings.
No.
I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that might have had a real central location, but these might be the only two I can think of off the top of my head. Unless you count Ghost of Mars, because that's
which
basically
was a remake
kind
of
a
this.
Remake, but that's a big budget.
Okay, how many times did John Carpenter remake Rio Bravo? Okay, there's Assault on Precinct 13.
Check.
There's, dare I say, Prince of Darkness.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Very loosely.
Loosely could
be. But this small group of people.
Trapped in a
central location. And bad things and guys are trying to get at them.
Yep.
And they're trying to survive through the night.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then Ghosts of Mars.
Yes. Which weren't bad.
And was he like executive producer of the remake or something? Of Assault?
Oh, of Assault? Maybe. I never checked it out.
I didn't want to see it either.
Same here.
Wasn't Carpenter. I didn't want to see it.
Right.
You know why I didn't want to see it? Because I already seen it.
I saw exactly. We saw this one.
That's right.
I don't need to go see that again.
And I'm telling you, I'll say it over and over again, but if you like zombie movies, check this out.
I think so. I think if you really like zombie movies, you can appreciate what
because
Carpenter did.
Up until this point, really, this was 1976. Dawn of the Dead didn't come out until
78,
77, 78.
78, yeah.
And so up until this point, the only traditional or what we know as zombie movies now was Night of the Living Dead.
I think you're right.
Because didn't Fulci Zombie
Fulci's
didn't
came
come
out after, because that was, quote, a sequel to Dawn.
So that came out like 79 or 80.
79, I think. Late 79. Something like that. I want to say it's 79. It might not have hit theaters till 80, but I think the actual date, I guess when it was made, was 79. So
have to talk about that one sometime, too.
Ah, that's a good one.
That's definitely a good one.
Very good one.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to bring up, I keep forgetting his name, Austin Stoker.
Yeah,
character.
Bishop.
Black actor, black lead.
Yeah.
What do you think? Still maybe a little not quite the mainstream at that time. No. I know you had the black exploitation stuff kind of going on, and I guess I watch a lot of genre movies, as you do too.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, still, a strong black lead actor.
Wasn't commonplace.
It wasn't commonplace.
Not yet.
And, man, Carpenter picked a great actor to do it. Yeah. I really enjoyed his character in this.
Yeah. Well, he's good. Like I say, he's good, solid. He's got charisma. He's got presence.
Yeah, he does. He really does. He's got the presence.
Without throwing in your face, he kind of makes you watch him.
Yeah. There you go. That when he gets to the precinct and he's getting out of the car and he's just kind of taking in the area and he's looking and the sun's going down and you just read it in his face, like he knows something ain't quite right.
It's just
something's not right. Yeah. And I thought that was really good.
It's like
he
knows
that across.
Yeah, maybe this isn't a good idea. And he just kind of dismisses it. Well, I got to get to work.
Exactly.
But something hits him. And you can see it in his face.
It's not just the setting or the music.
Yeah.
He also conveyed it in the way he was acting. Yeah. And it just, sign of a good actor.
Because in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, he was as good as you're going
to
get.
I have to go back and see that, because I can't remember his
performance. He was as good as you're going to get in that. But
as far as a later Apes movie, Planet of the Apes
he didn't really have, he didn't have much to do as far as range of acting.
I got you.
What I mean. But he pulled off what he was, was supposed to do. And also, in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, if you look in some of the background shots, some of the humans somewhere, John Landis.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And somebody that looks like, I don't know if it is or not, but what's his name? Christopher Stone? Mary D. Wallace?
Yes, he was in The Howling. Yes.
I can't remember if he's in it or if a guy looks just like him. But there's another one I could talk about all night. But getting back to Assault on Precinct 9.
D. Wallace or
Apes?
Planet of the Apes. I was like, where are you going with that? I lost it.
But getting back to Precinct 9, Division 13. Which is what I'm going to call the movie from now on. Assault on Precinct 9, Division 13.
I'm just saying assault, because every time precinct never seems to come out of my mouth right. So I'm just saying assault, so I don't sound like an idiot.
I think we briefly touched on earlier the music.
Yeah, again, it's that stripped down, simple,
very
Carpenter
simple
score.
Yeah, and Carpenter, man, can he write kind of a haunting tune.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you listen, the Halloween is different from the synthesizer stuff.
Yeah.
But still, it's that repetitive, very simple, dun 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 dun.
And if he changes it, if you notice in Precinct, some quieter scenes, you'll hear the theme, but it's a little different.
Yeah, and there's that one heavier theme that plays when the bad guys are doing something.
Yes,
and that one lighter theme that plays when the good guys are doing something, But it's all this electronic synthesizer stuff, which, not like today, where everything's electric,
or it's a rock band, or a lot of times you get that more modern stuff.
Oh yeah,
you get a lot of the I don't know. Rob Zombie likes to throw in some 70s tune or something.
No, that's a different case altogether. Now Rob Zombie, I think when his movies, which it could be a whole another, would have to be a whole another discussion.
Oh yeah,
but I think one thing I do like about his movies is he picks the songs he picks for the scenes is almost perfect.
I'd have to go back and watch, because I'm not a big fan of his movies except for Lords of Salem, which everyone else seems to hate, but I actually liked that one.
Oh, God.
I know. House was
okay. I'll let you stay to the end of the podcast.
All right, I'll leave it at that. 1,000 Corpses was good in the theater. My second viewing, I didn't really care for it. I thought Devil's Rejects was just violence for violence sake.
Okay, see, I'm
and I just couldn't get into it. Plus the whole, he fucked a chicken. I hate that scene with the passion. Yes. I'm like, why is this even in Zombie does stuff like that, and I'm like, I think
it was just for that, just to be outrageous and funny.
I guess so. Plus, you know, to have Ken Foree in that discussion.
Wait, you know, I'd like to see the outtakes from that, because you know they're probably busting.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Now, I feel the exact opposite.
Okay.
Devil's Rejects. Oh, well, let's go back. Corpses, I loved.
Okay.
And I thought it was sort, not quite tongue-in-cheek, but almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of a tribute to a lot of different...
Oh, a whole lot of different
stuff.
Grindhouse
type horror
yes,
movies.
Yes, I tell you this much. I liked it up until... Probably, to me, it kind of lost it when you had the whole underground Dr. Satan lair, and I was like, But up until then, I liked the isolation. I liked
everything,
the crazy-ass Sherry Moon zombie. You know?
I'm the same way with you right there. That once it gets to that point, it kind of loses me, but I watch it to get to that end scene in the car.
Oh, yes. Now, that is a good...
That's
70s. I'll give you
that's
very 70s. Yes, I'll give you that. Yep.
Devil's Rejects... I don't usually like that type of, like, just a crime, violent movie.
Right.
But I like the way Rob Zombie makes a movie.
You know
what I mean?
Okay.
And for it being a tribute to that type of movie, it felt like it was one made back then.
Okay.
More or less.
I can see that.
You know? And
plus, it does have a great cast.
Oh, God, it's got a great
cast. There's, like, all these people.
Yeah. But that's another discussion.
Yes, exactly.
And we're not even going to start on his Halloween remake.
That's not even worth talking about.
Yeah. So back to John Carpenter's music.
To Carpenter.
But yeah, you take his music in this, and then you go Halloween, and then you go Escape from New York.
That's a good one.
Which is a great...
That's a great score.
That boom,
the
boom,
Fog is another one that really... Oh, that is... I like that. I love... Yes.
Yeah, it's just this haunting, just smooth kind of melody that just kind of creeps
you
in.
Don't
you know?
Expect it.
No.
In a way, when you go to see, I'm going to see Escape from New York, and you get that. What? Assault on Precinct... see, I can't say it. Mm-hmm. Assault on Precinct 13 kind of has, when that music starts in the beginning credits, almost kind of like, this doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
But then
what am I watching?
Yeah. But it does creep into you.
Yeah, it gives you almost an uneasy kind of feeling in both those themes that, like, okay, something's going to happen and you're waiting for it.
Right.
That's what it makes me.
Yeah.
That's what it made me feel. Anyway, I'm like, all right, I'm ready. Let's go. Come on,
bring it on. Bring on the assault. It's a siege.
It's a
goddamn siege. Yeah, I love that line.
That is a good line.
He just realizes it. You know, that's great.
And speaking of his music, though, I just found out. I think I was telling you earlier, the soundtrack for Assault on Precinct 13, this original one, just became available a few years ago.
That baffles me. I can't believe it.
I mean, he wrote it in 76, you know, for the movie, and it was never released. Bootleg copies were floating around conventions, but it got an official release just a couple years ago. So I'm gonna look for it.
Yeah, might as well. I mean,
yeah, I've got Escape from New York. I gotta have this.
I got Halloween.
Yes, sir.
And The Fog. I think those are the only two Carpenters I got. I got Halloween 2. He did the music for that, didn't he? Or did Alan Howarth do that? I can't remember.
I don't know. I don't know.
Like that as much as the original, but
no.
It's a little more electronic.
Yeah, but we can find out more about that movie.
Yes.
From Michael Myers himself. Good friend of the program.
Yeah.
Soon to be good friend of the program, Mr. Dick Warlock.
You're going to have Mr. Warlock?
I might try.
Man, that would be great. That would be great.
We might try to get him at an event sometime next
That'd
year.
That'd be nice, too. Wow.
Hell of a
I missed out.
Yeah,
when he was at the Williamsburg convention. So yeah,
well,
man,
he and his
back.
Wife, great, nicest people you ever want to meet, and they just live in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's not too bad, too far a drive.
You know,
what's funny though, and if anyone's listening, you know, do a
I hope
Google.
Somebody's listening.
Yeah, hopefully someone's listening.
Somebody besides mom.
Google Dick Warlock, and you know, look at pictures of him now, and it is so funny to see that guy and go. That was Michael Myers, you know, because he's very easygoing. Of course, now he's got like this big Western looking
cowboy mustache,
and it just makes me laugh. You know,
and you talk to him, and he's laughing and joking, all smiling.
Yeah,
nicest fella.
Funny to see the people that portray
evil
on two legs.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's funny.
You know, he was actually in a scene in the first Halloween too.
Yeah, crap. Yes,
where Michael Myers, where he falls off the railing at the end.
That was the stunt.
That was Dick Warlock.
That means you had, four different people in one movie?
Yeah.
playing the shape.
But, you know, hey.
Back to, yeah.
We'll let him tell those stories.
That's right. We'll let him tell those. We won't tell them for him because he knows more than we do.
And it's more fun to hear him tell them. Exactly. And how he got his start at Disney, too. So he doubled for Kurt Russell in all that live-action Disney stuff. He was Kurt Russell's double.
Oh, gosh. Can't remember any of them.
Computer War Tennis Shoes, Strongest Boy in the World, all those movies. And he was pretty much signed to be Kurt Russell's double.
Wow.
And they were friends. They hit it off.
And they did a lot of contract.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
then.
Yeah.
We're still doing
and
that
he has doubled
stuff.
For Kurt Russell in almost everything unless he was working on something else.
Wow.
He was...
Escape from New York.
He doubled for Plissken.
Yeah.
He doubled for Big Trouble in China for Jack Burton.
Oh, nice.
You know? There's pictures of him. Yeah, there's pictures of him beside him in the same costume.
Oh, nice.
Also, too, if you... It just... little sidebar, he was in Jaws.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. I think I heard the story.
You go in Cage? Cage goes in water?
Yes.
Shark's in water. I shark. He was the guy
in the
cage.
Yeah. That's right. That's right, because he talked about that at the Williamsburg Film Factory Film Convention. Bleh. Yeah.
I tell you, this year, I can't remember the guest list off the top of my head. I'll have to get a flyer, but this coming film festival is their 20-year anniversary. And they're bringing back guests from the past 20 years. And they have like half again as many as they usually have. So a lot more guests than they usually have. And God, off the top of my head, I can't remember who's going to be there. But it's going to be a good one. So if you get a chance, go to the Williamsburg Classic Film Festival or Williamsburg Film Festival Facebook page or website and check that out. It's always a good show. Tribute to pretty much classic Hollywood and classic Westerns. It's a fun time.
I need to go to that.
Yes, sir. And it's just up the street in Williamsburg.
I know.
So
always something happening.
Hey, but back to Assault on Precinct 13. I'm sorry. Assault on Precinct 9, Division 13.
Division 13. Another Night of the Living Dead reference I found.
Yeah.
Or at least I saw it. When they do when Wells tries to make his escape through the sewer out of the manhole.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It just reminded me of the trip to the gas pumps.
Oh, yeah. The ill-fated trip.
The ill-fated, because this guy's was ill-fated.
It was not going to succeed no matter what.
You knew it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know,
but you're waiting for it.
It sets it up, but you're waiting for it. I really was thinking it was going to be a little more spectacular death, but it was...
Well, I was waiting for the car to blow up.
Well, that's what I was waiting. Yes, I'm waiting for the car to explode, but he gets it.
But you know what? You know what? It's that same... What I was just talking about. It's that end scene from...
House of Corpses. Yes, because the dude pops up from the back of the squad
and
car.
You're like, hey, he's going to make...
Oh, crap. Yeah.
Damn.
Well, maybe it was just a window breaking somewhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Like he believed that himself when he said that.
He believed it for about 2 seconds, and then they're all like, God damn it.
Yeah. You know, another kind of cool thing is they didn't throw around... Well, of course, they had a low budget, and they were on time. You know, they had to film stuff and keep going. But they didn't waste any time or any scenes on when the bad guys were trying to break in and Napoleon is like, you know, throw me a gun. You know, they're coming in. I can't hold the door. And Bishop opened that thing and threw him a shotgun without thinking. He turned around and blasted the hell out of his guys.
Yes, he did.
You know, and it's like, wait, I can't give you a gun. You're the bad guy. How do I know you won't turn it on me?
He didn't
hesitate
it on him. He gave one to Wells.
And a lot of other movies would have gone on that moral
back and forth.
But this is like, no, shit's happening. It's happening to all of us.
And that's,
and we got to take care of it. And they all knew one of them wasn't going to get out of there unless they worked together.
Right.
Without saying it, they knew it.
Yep.
You know?
And that's what I like about Bishop's character was the fact that he knew, you know, like I said, we got to work together and I'm not going to sit here and argue about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you something to shoot with, and we're going to hopefully survive this thing.
Yeah.
Which they did.
Yeah. And Napoleon Wilson, his character was kind of cool, because later on he says, I don't know if this is the same scene, but somebody asked him, why didn't you run too, or what?
Yeah, and I think that was earlier in the film.
Well, you know.
Or middle.
Two things. He says something about a couple things a man shouldn't run from.
Yes, yeah, so it was the scene with the girl.
Oh, yeah, Lee.
Lee, yes.
Yeah, Laurie Zimmer. But there another time he says to he turns to Bishop and he says, well, that's two times you saved my life. So it's kind of like you saved my life,
I got your back.
Yeah, I got your back kind of thing, you know. An unspoken.
Right, yeah.
But you get it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And you're right. Yeah, Carpenter doesn't have to beat you over the head with anything. Yeah.
And in that aspect, they were like two cowboys, like Western characters.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, all right. I can go there. I like that.
Well, Carpenter's a big Western fan, and it shows, if you really watch it, you know, it shows in a lot of his
movies. I bet you could. I bet you if you went and you really looked into the genre, the Western genre, and just kind of look at some of these Carpenter films. Yeah.
Well, this one especially, I mean, he says no bones about it. It's a tribute, you know, a lot of Howard Hawks stuff tribute in through in there.
You know,
throughout there, rather.
I had never thought about that until you said it. But yes, there's a lot of I'm not going to say banter, but there's a lot of good dialogue between everybody. You know, and you get that in a lot of the Howard Hawks films, especially Thing from Another World. That movie survives off the dialogue.
And
really.
not a lot of wasted dialogue in this movie.
It's all good dialogue, and it sets up everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like you said, there's no wasted dialogue. It motivates the film to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and it keeps your interest. And I think that's a great, of course, that's always a good sign of any movie. But you know, if you can take a movie, stick it in a house or a building.
One location,
and you're good for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
That's good filmmaking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's very good filmmaking.
And even when the action slows down, the film doesn't slow down.
Nope, it keeps going.
Yeah.
Because you're worried. You're worried just like they are. Because they're like, how the hell are we going to get out of here?
Yeah.
Plus, you got cops driving around.
They keep driving around. They can't find where they're supposed to be. What about down that street? Nah, there's nothing down there. The police station's closed.
Exactly, yeah.
No need to go down that street where everything's happening because we can't find out anything out here.
Did they end up... Don't they end up getting attacked? I think they do.
God, I can't
remember now.
You know, I just had on this afternoon. That might have been when I went to the bathroom.
This is what you miss when you take a piss, everybody.
Because I couldn't have just stopped it. Because
you couldn't pause it. Because
I don't have the technology to pause a movie here.
That's good. Oh, that's good.
Man.
But one thing I did like about
that. Hey, if you want to find out if the two cops got killed, watch the movie.
But
if you know if the two cops got killed, drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page.
I'd like to hear your input. Talking about the two cops, you know, they radio in.
Yeah.
To headquarters. And they're telling me, you know, we can't find Jack out here. You know, because people are saying, oh, her gunfire, this, that, and the other. And they can't find nothing. And they keep requesting a helicopter.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking to myself, if you only had the helicopter, because
it would have been over.
It would have been over.
Yeah.
And I like the way Carpenter, you know, the two choppers they had, or however many, I think they only had, like, I think he says that they had two.
Yeah.
They're doing something.
They're all occupied.
They're in use. They're in use, you know, and you're thinking, oh, yeah. I like that little turn in there. Because, you know, Carpenter's trying to build that whole, there helps on the way.
Yeah.
It's right down the street.
Yeah, it's like, it's just without, not you quite almost the, reach yes. it.
Yeah, you're like, oh, just turn down the damn street.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
And you're sitting there, dude, it's right there, guys. Right. Come on. You know.
Right across from the Piggly Wiggly. It's right there.
Not a Piggly Wiggly.
I guess we probably move to the climax, the Jaws climax, if you will, with the acetylene tank.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm not quite sure what he had. He had an acetylene tank, and then he had
a box
of road flares.
Yeah,
and they were going to ignite and explode this.
Set up the scene. What is they've gone down to the basement now.
Yes.
Because that's their last stand
before
the Indians ride down in the valley on them. You know,
Custard last
off stand. Off the ridge, ride down in the ravine. And they got, what, this big metal sign that was...
support your local sheriff.
Yeah, that
I
was
think
on
it's
the
what it says,
yeah.
says something like
support
that
your local
there.
Police. So they've got that in front of them, which fills the hallway.
Yes.
And what they've done is they've got this acetylene torch that was in one of the boxes to be shipped off, and these road flares, they wrap the road flares around it and put it in the corner. So it's kind of out of the way, nobody's paying attention to it.
And if you notice, near the beginning of the film, he makes mention of the crates with acetylene torch.
Oh, yeah. If a stray bullet hit that, we'd all be blown up.
Hint.
So it didn't just come out of nowhere.
Right, yeah.
But you forget about it.
Yeah, you do.
Because it was just one of those things. It's like just them going, whew.
Yeah, glad that didn't happen. Yep.
You know, it wasn't in your face kind of thing. Like, hey, acetylene torch,
you're
foreshadowing.
Right.
You
no
know.
Arrows popped up pointing at it.
So they put that in the corner, and they get behind the sign. And they've got a sign pushed up, and they're going to wait for as many of the gang members to come down there as possible. And they've only he's got three shots in his rifle. Wilson has, what, two shots?
And the girl's has two
yeah. or three, something like that. And she's facing the vent down the other hallway.
Right, yes, yes, yeah.
By the prison cells. And she's got the guy who's Kim Richards' dad, and she's sitting there.
Who never says another damn word in the whole movie.
She is, it's cool because she gets him coming through the vent, and she shoots one of them. They got to drag him out of the way before another guy can get past him.
Right, yeah.
So they'll fill up that hole, so.
And it does. It does kind of stockpile there,
So she shoots a couple of them, and she's good right there, and then Wilson and Bishop have gotten to where they're hitting the guys with crowbars, where they're trying to get...
Because
they can't shoot through the metal sign.
Right, yes.
So they're trying to get over and club them, and they're hitting them, and they're pushing the sign back, which is cool. They're pushing the sign back further away from the acetylene torch.
Yes, and it reminds me of that scene in Dawn of the Dead when they bust the door open, and all of a sudden all the zombies come out.
Exactly.
And it does give you that... They're clamoring. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming at this point, even the gang has reverted to using fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Because they're not shooting.
No, well,
I think there's a few gunshots.
Yeah,
but they're
the metal sign.
Yeah,
so they're coming up there with sticks and
hammers and stuff,
And they've got a crowbar and a stick, and they're hitting them back. And Wilson's pretty much the only one holding the sign as the guys are pushing it back because Bishop shoots, and on that third shot, he hits it, blows them all to shit.
Yep.
And one of the coolest scenes in the movie, right there at the end, after the explosion and all that, mm-hmm. and the cops in the white riot helmets, like all good 70s cops wore.
Yes, standard issue.
Yeah. They're walking through, and it's all smoky and hazy, then you can't see anything, and they're walking over the bodies.
Yes.
And then they stop, and the smoke clears, and it's got the three. Yeah, it's got Wilson,
there, yeah.
Lee, and Bishop. They're standing there with, she's got the gun, she's going to pistol whip somebody.
Right.
I think Wilson has a crowbar or something. Bishop has a stick. They're all just standing there ready, and they see the cops, and they're
oh.
And then Wilson says, anybody got a smoke?
Yes. Which is great.
Yeah, his line.
Which is, I would say that's very Howard Hawks.
Yeah.
I would say that, because there's a part in The Thing from Another World that is kind of like that. You've got characters mm-hmm. like that who kind of ask the same thing or have that one thing about them. That carries throughout the movie. But his was, you gotta smoke.
Yeah.
He finally did get one, and it was Lori Zimmer.
That was in the middle of the movie.
That was towards the middle of the movie.
Now, you're talking about smoldering.
Yeah, yeah.
When she hands him that smoke, and then just flicks the match with her thumb and lights it.
Yes, thank you
very
much.
She puts the smoke in his mouth and doesn't take her eyes off of.
They had good chemistry going on there.
I think at that moment, he thought, this woman could tear me up.
Yeah. I might have bitten off a little more I could chew.
I'm a badass killer, but maybe I should back the hell up.
Well, we talked earlier. She does get shot in the arm, and she doesn't phase her, which I don't know if that was just part of the character.
Yeah.
It took me a minute.
I think it was, because the whole time she's just matter of fact about everything. And,
very low key.
She doesn't get excited.
Yeah.
Even when... what was the character's name? Nancy Loomis' character. Julie.
Yeah, Julie, yeah.
When they turn around and find that she had got shot by one of the stray bullets, she's dead. She's upset, but she doesn't start bawling.
Nope. You're right. Very strong female.
Yeah. She's upset, but she keeps it in check. She doesn't lose it, and because they still got to survive the night.
Yep. And really, that's kind of a good little dynamic there. You got the two women actresses.
Yeah.
And Loomis plays the more, fragile.
Barbara.
Yeah. And she plays a stronger character.
Yeah.
I wish she hadn't died, though, because, like I said, I have a thing for Nancy Loomis.
She comes back for Halloween, though.
Yeah, she does. So. And The Fog.
Yeah.
And a second appearance in Halloween 2.
There you go.
She's dead, but hey. Oh, like no one knows Annie dies, That's, yeah. And then I can't think of any other Carpenter film she was in.
I don't know. I'd have to look
it up. She didn't do many.
No.
If you look her up on Internet Movie Database,
it's
a very small collection. I think she just kind of went out of acting. Of course, she was married. I don't know if she still is. She was married to Tommy Wallace.
Yeah, that's right.
Who was the sound effects director
that's
on this film. Plus, he directed Halloween 3, went on to direct Halloween 3.
Yeah.
and did he was the Shape. He was another one that played the Shape in the first Halloween movie. Plus, he made the Myers mask. That was Tommy Wallace.
Oh, that was him.
Yes,
oh,
that was
wow.
Tommy Wallace. He made the mask. He ripped up the Kirk mask.
So, yeah.
Which I would love to have. Just a, you know, just an old Kirk mask just to have it.
Somebody, man, I saw something talking about Halloween. I was looking at Carpenter stuff. There's a blooper scene in one of the, maybe it's the second one, or it might be the first one, where it's an,
It's blonde?
Yeah, it's an, like
a, I posted that.
You posted. That's where
in Halloween, that's where you saw it.
You posted.
That was in Halloween 4. That was a,
an unfinished.
An unfinished kind of pre-production mask. And I am still surprised at this day that they left that in, because it's not a real quick glancing.
Yeah.
You got to pause it and go, oh, hey, look, the mask is all weird. No, it's bam, right there. And you're like, why, it's blonde? What the hell's going on here? Anyway, there's another tangent.
I'll have to take a look at that. I'll have to look that up.
It's there. It's plain as day. Oh, man. But again, back to.
Yes, sir.
Precinct 9, Division 13. Oh, man, good. Man, just good up and down from beginning to end.
Yeah, like I said earlier.
Not a dull moment.
A dull moment. It doesn't slow down.
No. Nope.
Even when the action slows down, the tension is still there.
Yep.
And the dialogue is still solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, yeah, it's just a good all-around movie.
I think my favorite part is the build-up to Kim Richardson's death.
Oh,
because it is so tense.
Yeah.
That car keeps going back and forth. And, you know, yeah.
And Ice Cream Guy knows something bad's going down.
Yeah.
And they go away. And he's like, oh, okay.
Carpenter really did a great job on that. It's like I said, it's just, man.
It does. Carpenter knows how to build some suspense and some tension.
He does. Really do. And I think you see it. I really think you see it in the earlier films. You really see it in the earlier films.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Of course.
But, man, I don't know, some of his new films after that, I guess after, I don't know, after Big Trouble, Little China. So, you know, he started going to the 90s Carpenter stuff.
Well, he got bigger budgets.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to stretch what he had to work with.
There you go. And I think that's what he did best.
Yeah.
I think you give Carpenter less money. And you might out with
a better film.
He makes a better movie.
Yeah,
And no knock against him at all.
No, I like his work.
You
know? I love his stuff. But if you look, I mean, the stuff that people really love seems to be Halloween,
mm-hmm.
The Thing.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know, and this has this cult underground kind of following.
Does, yep. The Fog's another one.
The Fog, yeah. Now, not to say that Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, great film.
Bigger budget,
but what a great movie.
But a great movie. Escape from New York
oh, yeah, there
didn't
you go.
Have a big budget.
It
looks like it did, though.
Well, you know, they used a burnt-out section of...
It's like St. Louis or something.
St. Louis or somewhere. Yeah. They just had a large fire, so they had this...
Burned a couple city blocks.
Yes, had all these city blocks to use. So, yeah, you got lucky on that, I guess.
Yeah.
But just...
having a little cocktail
there
here.
There you go. But, yeah.
Well, I mix up another salad.
But Carpenter's good. There's no question about it. Good director.
Yeah, if you see the hear the behind the scenes stuff on some of the effects and how he like did the animated effects of like the ultralight plane coming in. Yeah, Carpenter did those himself.
Really?
The buildings and stuff.
I did not.
Yeah, look it up.
You learn something when you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, you do. I learn stuff all the time. but yeah, watch I think it's like the extras on the Escape from New York disc.
Okay.
There's good stuff on there. And, you know, talking about Carpenter doing stuff himself, man. This movie, he wrote, directed, edited.
Music. Yeah. He did the soundtrack.
He edited. If you look, though, editing, it says John T. Chance was the editor. Which is, it was Carpenter, and that's John Wayne's name from Rio Bravo.
Yes. And another thing I like about Carpenter, he always throws in a little something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you might not get it.
No.
But about third, fourth time you're watching the movie, and you're like, oh, no way.
Yeah.
You know, he tied that in.
But he edited the movie himself. His partner.
Deborah Hill?
Deborah Hill, uncredited, I think, helped him edit. I think so. But she did something else on the film, though. She was on crew for this film.
Okay.
I just can't remember what her credit was.
Well, it may not have been this film. It could have been Dark Star. I want to say it was a film distributor he pays homage to in Halloween.
Oh, yeah?
I just throw it out there because I learned this the other day. The distributor's name was Michael Myers. So he paid homage to this guy because he basically, without that guy, he wouldn't really gotten his start. He named the
that's
character.
Awesome.
Yeah. And again,
that's
you know, awesome. Carpenter adding a nod to something, you know, or someone.
He's good for that, man. He's good for that, you know?
Yep. Yes, sir. Wow.
I tell you, this movie, man, you know, this would be cool. I'd love to show this at the Narrow sometime.
That would be a good one. Yeah.
Maybe do a double feature with something else, but or just show it by itself. But, you know, I'll say it before. I've said it before. I'll say it again if I, you know, oh, grammar, good. it is the best non-zombie zombie film. Maybe we've explained that throughout this.
I hope so.
If we haven't, or if we have and you're curious, watch the damn movie.
Yeah.
It's an enjoyable movie on a couple different levels. But just to see that, I mean, I remember the first time it hit me, and that's kind of a common knowledge thing now.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's out there. Other people have said it.
I didn't make it up. Yeah, I read about it in Fangoria, like in the 80s. So it's been in my head, and I've always wanted to see it.
I hadn't read anywhere, but I remember I was watching it some years ago. I don't know how many years ago, and it just hit me. It's like, man, those guys are like zombies. This is a zombie movie. This is awesome. You know who did not know it?
Who was it?
Torres.
Really? Mr.
Alfredo Torres, who used
Mr.
to do
himself.
Torres vs. Zombies, a long-running podcast.
I miss that guy.
All-around good guy. A lot of fun to be around. We were talking. He had never seen this movie.
Oh, wow.
And just before he moved, we were talking about it. And I said, dude, what do you mean you've never seen this on
Blu-ray?
Yeah,
you're
really the zombie guy.
Yeah.
I said, it's a zombie movie with no zombies. And he looked at me like, what? And I was like, it is the best non-zombie zombie movie ever made. And he's like, I'll go out and get it tomorrow. I said, you better.
Yeah.
You know?
Run. Don't walk. Yeah. Go get it. And you said this has a Blu-ray possibly?
I think I saw something on there was a Blu-ray release. There's tons of stuff has been coming out recently on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's no place right here that carries any of this stuff. You got to look online.
Yeah.
But if you look inside, I tell you, a good magazine that always has a page of Blu-ray releases is Horror Hound.
Yes, yes. The new issue has a nice collection of good releases.
I was picking up every issue for a while because I'd read. It was almost cover to cover because there was good stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple issues in a row, I was like, only one article I want to read. Now, I wasn't excited about everything in it, and then I just haven't picked up any since. But I'll flip through it when I go to the store, to check. And as always, the current horror Blu-ray releases.
Right.
And there's a lot of good stuff has come out, and I think that's one of them.
Well, I'll recommend The Sentinel, the 70s occult film.
Oh, with
Cara Dean and, gosh.
Sylvia Miles.
Yes.
And
the guy from Fright Night. I remember
Chris Sarandon.
Chris Sarandon, Burgess Meredith.
Yeah, and
Vacation.
What's her name?
Ellen from Vacation. That one.
Yeah, the mom.
Yeah.
Beverly D'Angelo.
Yes.
And her D'Angelos.
Yes, yes.
And that sexy overbite.
Yes.
But that's not who I was thinking of. The lead chick in that, wasn't she the one that was in Legend of Hill House?
Ooh. I'd have to look it up.
I might have that totally back ass words.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Oh, wonderful.
We watched that. That was on Netflix a couple years ago.
Yes, yeah.
And Phyllis and I sat down and watched it, and it was better than I remember it from watching it back in the 80s. You know?
I had not seen it. I had the VHS.
Yeah.
Had not watched it in years. Blu-ray came out. I said, well, that's a no-brainer. I got to get this. Holy crap. Man, it's like watching a movie for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
It's
you
such
talk
a
about
beautiful
it,
transfer.
It's a creepy possessed house movie, more or less.
More or less.
If you like that kind of thing, this is one of the top of the bunch.
And one of the only movies I could say Burgess Meredith is creepy as shit in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He really cranks it up at the end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, it's a bit of a reveal. We won't go into that movie, but he's really good.
Maybe we'll do that movie sometime on here.
Well, that's a wonderful film.
Yeah.
But speaking of, like, the DVD release of this, and I mentioned it when I came
here.
Yeah, Image put it out on DVD. I don't know who's putting it out on Blu-ray, if it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was a little disappointed.
It's DVD,
bare bones.
Yeah, that particular... I don't know if there's other DVD releases, but that particular one that we have, bare bones, no extras on it, just the movie. Good print.
And you don't even get a real menu.
No, not really.
It's play and then the list of chapters.
That's it.
I was kind of disappointed in that.
And it's a good transfer. That's a good print.
And you know, it's funny. You see, it is a good print.
Yeah.
But I guess because, and I noticed it on yours.
Uh-huh.
The Blu-ray, I guess, does that little up convert,
uh-huh.
and you really see.
Oh yeah.
The problems. You know, with the transfer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I guess it does. It does. It, if it doesn't have one, it needs a nice.
Yeah.
High definition.
Well, release. I want to say I think it's out there, and I'm going to look for it because I love this movie, and it's one of those movies that. I don't watch all the time.
Oh no!
And I forget how much I love it until I think I'm like, ooh, I want to watch it, and I watch it again, and it's like, oh man, this is so good.
Yeah, well, I am so glad. You know, we discussed what you want to talk about.
Yeah,
and I can't remember. I don't know if you suggested it or just we blurted it out.
Well, I know it's one. I've got a list of stuff that I want to eventually get to and
do
and talk about on these podcasts, and that was one that has been at the top of the list.
Okay.
But it's just been picking a time and when to do it, and then when you and I were talking, and I suggested a couple different things, and I think I threw that out there, and you're like, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, it did. It was one of those. I was like, crap, I've not seen it in years.
Yeah.
This would be, and I'm glad, because I forgot how good it was. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's about it. I don't have anything else to add, do you?
No, not really. Like I said, it's good.
If you like John Carpenter, if you like zombie movies,
if you have an unhealthy obsession with Nancy Loomis,
yeah, all of the above, or if you have an unhealthy obsession with Austin Stoker,
he's a smooth operator.
He is He should have been in some of the blaxploitation, like at the top. He was he was in Abby.
Oh crap, really? All right,
it was Austin Stoker, Colonel Ty from Battlestar
Galactica.
And William Marshall. And the only thing that saves that movie is William Marshall.
I've heard it's really bad. Yeah,
it's not good. Of the blaxploitation movies,
yeah,
it's in the bottom two.
Ooh, that's bad.
The blaxploitation horror movies, that is. But when William Marshall's on the screen, you wake up and you watch.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. But anyway,
all right.
All that aside, that's another podcast. If you like zombie movies, you like John Carpenter, you have an unhealthy obsession with Nancy Loomis or Austin Stoker, or Kim Richards.
Hey, yikes.
Watch this movie. Go do yourself a favor. The DVD is probably in the $5 bin.
Oh, yeah.
Or if not, it's relatively cheap. Or seek out that Blu-ray and let me know how good it is, because I'm going to get it soon. But watch the movie. It's a great movie. You won't be sorry. You'll enjoy it.
It's good.
All right. Well, thanks for being on, Dan.
Dude, I appreciate it. I had a blast.
We'll do another one soon. And good night, everybody.